Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 5th of February. It is 2021. I have been informed. Anyway, I'm not entirely convinced. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, it is Friday, and I am glad.
Yeah. One of the, as you should be, one of the notable things about today is that it is International Clash Day. So you should go look up International Clash Day and find yourself the loudest, the speakers in your life capable of generating the highest volume, and go listen to The Clash today. You can thank me later. You can also look up International Clash Day and find out more about it. Anyway, we are here today, as we are most Fridays, with Security Friday. It's sadly a thing we end up doing on the regular. Yeah. We'd really love to just show up one day and be like, no, but that's but it is not this day. And in fact, it is so not this day that we have some I guess old business, because the ATT, not AT&T, but ATT concept that Apple has been standing behind and trying to develop sounds like a really good idea to somebody else.
Yeah, so we've talked about ATT before. This is app tracking transparency, and this is the thing you'll see in the upcoming iOS 14.5, where if an app wants to track you, you'll get a pop-up and it will ask you if you want to allow that. Mm-hmm. Now, according to Mark Gurman, writing for Bloomberg, it sounds like Google is exploring its own alternative to that for Android.
Fascinating.
Now, at its heart, Google is an advertising company.
Yes.
So it's probably not going to be like as strict as Apple's implementation. Mm-hmm. And so this quote here says, the Google solution is likely to be less strict and won't require a prompt to opt into data tracking like Apple's. And to keep advertisers happy while improving privacy, the discussions around Google's Android solution indicate that it could be similar to its planned Chrome web browser changes.
Okay.
To kind of... Google said, I guess, last year, they want to phase out third-party cookies in Chrome within 2 years.
Okay.
So maybe it's some kind of something to do with cookies, I guess.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, you know, as you pointed out, Google is an advertising company. So for Android to be kind of interested in this is the part that's kind of notable. The thing, yeah, I thought was interesting about this is that, first of all, good on Android for determining this was a good idea, because it seems like a pretty good idea. It's a customer-friendly mm-hmm. feature. I know a lot of times, you know, something that's good for customers isn't good for advertisers. We've been over that. But the secondary piece of this is that I've always appreciated, you know, related to the app tracking transparency, is how much information the app wants about you and finding that out before you ever download it. And the Google Play Store has done that for a long time. If you look at an app, yeah, in the Android store, it'll say, this flashlight wants access to your contacts and your call history and all your text messages. No. So you can tell before you ever download it what permissions it wanted from you. And I always really liked that about the Android app store. So I'm glad that the iOS app store has included that feature. So So it's going to be interesting to see how Facebook feels about this one, I think.
Because definitely.
Because we know how mad they got when Apple did it. So let's see, now that it's, you know, what is this, 90-something% of smartphone operating systems out there, between Google, between Android OS and iOS. So we'll see. Now, in new business, we have this week in data breaches. Womp womp.
Yes. So this is from the Washington State. They were working with their state auditor's office was working with this contractor called Excellion, And on Monday, the Washington state government reported they had a data breach. And it could affect over 1.6 million people. So it's not insignificant.
No.
So let's see. They say during the week of January 25th, 2021, Exelion confirmed that an unauthorized person had gained access to some system files by exploiting a vulnerability in their file transfer service. And some of these data files included personal information of Washington state residents who had filed unemployment insurance claims in 2020. And may also include the information of residents who have not yet been identified, but whose information was also in state agency or local government files.
Yeah, if you had some sort of official state government contact, your information may be in some sort of file store that was part of this. So, super fun.
And their announcement page they do have a section for what you can do if you are concerned that you are affected.
Yeah.
So they have a bit more information on that page.
Yeah, and that's good. And I know people who are because Washington State's right over there. I know a number of people who are in the midst of trying to determine, like, was this me? And if it was, how bad is it? And, you know, all of that. So super duper fun. So we've had a data breach to talk about, and another of our favorites is a security exploit. So we have another bug we have a bug in macOS we need to discuss today.
Well, yeah, so it's a bug that affects command line systems. It's a bug that has to do with sudo, which is a very powerful command. It lets you gain administrator access to a system. And let's see, who found this? So this vulnerability was disclosed last week. It's called, the nickname for it is Baron Samedit, which I kind of like. Yes. A British security researcher discovered this. So at first, he found that it affected Linux and BSD. But as it turns out, ZDNet had written something up that says, well, actually, it does affect macOS too, because the terminal, the version of sudo that the terminal uses is also using this, affected by this.
Yeah.
So it just says this bug could trigger a heap overflow, and it could let an attacker gain access to the system by either planting malware on your device or brute forcing a low privileged service account.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about this is it does sound to me like this attacker would maybe have to access, directly access your system instead of remotely.
Yeah. In this particular case, it's, in order to get to do anything interesting, they would have to have a way in the first place. And the easiest in is physical access, of course. So that's part of the issue. So it's bad. And this is another one of those that, like, if you need sudo explained to you, then you aren't using it. And if you're not using it, and you don't do anything in the terminal and that kind of stuff, and you're not clicking on shady links from people, and you're fine. It is active, but, you know, like I said, if you're not leaving that stuff open, if you don't have remote access into your machine set up from, you know, anywhere on the internet and that kind of stuff, you will be reasonably protected from that. So just keep watch on what kind of remote access you offer to your machine. If you have it open and you're not currently using it, you should maybe close it.
And like, speaking of active, it does sound like it's still out there.
Oh, it is.
Because he told ZDNet the bug could still be exploited in the most recent version of macOS, even after applying the recent security patches Apple had released on Monday. So,
it's
And not I great. Mean, Apple is aware of this too, by the way.
And you did get I noticed you got a reply, because somebody said, like, it looks like this bug is from 2011. And yes, but it does affect macOS because it's the same pseudo code base as all the other flavors of Linux. So if they had built something different to do this, it would be a different story.
Yeah, that's the part I forgot. So this is a 10-year-old bug.
Yeah. Bonus. But Apple left out, like, if this makes sense to you, then you know you're pretty well covered. But for the most part, like, people are going to be okay. Apple left out the symbolic link for sudo edit, which is the thing that they're using to do this. So an attacker would have to create that, get into your machine, create that link, and then be able to exploit this. If it was what they wanted to do. So it's not like that's not possible. But again, if you don't, if you're not allowing remote access to your machine, if you've turned on like the basic firewall protection on your router, the basic firewall protection on your Mac, you're probably fine. So,
yeah.
But yes, this is one that is out in the wild. So it's definitely one to keep an eye on. So, yeah. All right. So that does it for news and updates today. And now I'd like to take a minute and talk to you about our sponsor this week, who is Amazon Pharmacy. Now, Amazon Pharmacy is exactly as advertised. It's Amazon that you know and perhaps love for Prime service and all of that. And Amazon Pharmacy allows you to use Amazon to coordinate with your doctor, get your medication and your prescriptions all together, let Amazon take care of it. And then they will deliver it right to your door, just like everything else from Amazon. So you can use it just like any other part of Amazon, like you already know. And you get the added bonus of not having to go to the pharmacy or wait in line at the pharmacy or stand around in the pharmacy. You don't have to do any of that. Everything just shows up at your door. Again, just like everything else from Amazon. So they work with most insurance plans. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get free two-day delivery on everything. And you can save on the on prescriptions that you aren't using insurance for. You might even be able to get a better price on them through Amazon. So that's Amazon.com/TDORX. Amazon.com/TDORX will get you deals on prescriptions through Amazon Pharmacy. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, today in Practical Tips, we have something that gives you an alternative for places that have not yet gotten it together and allowed you to use sign in with Apple.
Yeah, so I really like this. It is, I'm calling it an open source alternative to sign in with Apple because it's an app called Simple Login. And like Apple is, sign in with Apple, that's already private, but if you don't have Apple, or like Kelly said, you know, if there's a service that doesn't support signing with Apple, like Pinterest, there's this app called Simple Login. So what it does is you give it, you sign up with an account, you give it your actual email address, and then you can generate an unlimited number of email aliases. And it does the same thing when you use sign in with Apple, there is an option to hide your email address, and which will it gives the developer website a private relay address, what Apple calls it, and it forwards your emails from that app to your real email. And this does the exact same thing with an alias.
Yeah, if you've ever looked, it'll show you, you know, like 24 characters of letters and numbers at privaterelay.apple.com. And that's like your secret address that you use for that particular service. So, and this just does the same thing, which sounds pretty cool. And then you can go obliterate that later, right? If you, you know, there's a data breach or something, and you can just go obliterate that address and that account, you know, doesn't exist anymore, more or less. So,
I did download the app. I haven't really played with it too much yet. So it is free to download. There is an optional paid subscription for more advanced features.
Okay.
So you can get email aliases with if you have a custom domain or what's called a catch-all alias. So, yeah, I think it's great.
That's pretty interesting. I prefer stuff like this where like the basic functionality works, but if you want to pay for it, you can, because it's very clear, like, there's an option to keep this going. Like, I like this very much. Mm-hmm. I will pay you for it so I can keep having it. I like having that. So thank you, Simple Login, for that particular option. Now, yeah. We want to dig in for just a couple of minutes here and talk about something that Apple is doing that's called private click measurement.
Yeah, so kind of going back to Google in the beginning, you know, they're trying to create ATT, their own version of it, which is maybe a little bit more advertising friendly. Uh-huh. With this one, Apple is trying to do the same thing. Like, they don't want to just outright kill the advertising industry. Mm-hmm. So they just want to, you know, add some privacy. Mm-hmm. So with another thing that they're going to be adding to iOS 14.5 is called private click measurement. And it tries to give online advertisers a way to still measure their ads, like if you click on an ad, but in a way that is a bit more private. So okay. The WebKit blog had a whole announcement about it. What's interesting to me before we get into it is they say they first introduced this technology actually in 2019. It was just under a different name, but okay. It sounds like they're trying to adopt it and try to make it an open standard for other companies to use as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be very cool. So what is this? Like, if I'm using PCM, if I'm trying to support it, like, what exactly does it mean for me to be to like turn this on, let's say?
So the way I understood it, it sounds kind of similar to another Safari feature, intelligent tracking prevention, and that has to do I think with cookies.
Okay.
So for this one, it's a way it will. Okay, so I'll just read this. PCM achieves a trade-off by sending attribution reports like a click with limited data in a dedicated private browsing mode without any cookies. And the thing is that it will delay that report randomly between 24 and 40 hours to disassociate events in time and handling data on device. So, translation, to me it sounds like when you click on an ad, that will be measured by Safari in private browsing mode, but the advertiser won't get that immediately. Okay. And this is just a way to, I think, distance your actual identity and internet activity away from there, so it will be harder for them to track those ad clicks and associate them with you, and then of course follow you around the web.
Yeah,
that's how I think it goes.
Yeah, so I'm interested in seeing how this evolves, and I hope it gets adopted. I hope that it is something that is open and that becomes sort of a standard, because I like that this is a thing that they've gone into trying to find the balance between like giving people information that is helpful and keeping my information to myself if that's what I so desire. So mm-hmm. That's the part I think is going to be interesting about this.
Yeah. And like I said, they do want it to be to have other browsers adopt this. And they say a proposal needs two independent implementations to be on track to become a web standard. That means another browsers like Firefox or Chrome mm-hmm. would have to like independently implement them themselves. So I can kind of see Firefox maybe adopting this.
Okay.
Maybe not, Google Chrome, but Firefox, I think.
Yeah, I could get behind that. That would be great. Mm-hmm. That sounds fantastic. We will let you know how this evolves and what continues to happen with it as we get more information on it. Again, that's what Security Friday is all about. So real quick, if you have questions for us, if there's things that you think we need to cover, if you've been hearing something about what's coming in a new version of macOS or of iOS and you want to find out more about that, what that means for you, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com if email is your jam. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, or you can leave comments in the show notes. So, Andrew, as always, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, great to be here, and have a good weekend, everyone.
Indeed. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.